The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by Eno, the Capital One Assistant. What's in your wallet?
This is the Will Cain Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Any business survive a potential 50% drop in revenue, even if it's temporary, even if it's just for a year, maybe two. How do you batten down the hatches, conserve, tighten every strap, and survive a 50% revenue drop for any period of time? It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and on ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. And you can join the conversation at 888-729-3776. I want to ask that question and much more about the future of the NBA with ESPN's senior NBA writer and host of the Hoop Collective podcast. It's Brian Windhorst, who's on our phone lines. What's up, Brian?
Hi, Will.
So let me start with this. The NBA Players Association is taking a text vote as we speak, I believe. It's a yes or no, up or down vote. Do you want to return to play in 2020? What do you know about that, Brian? What can you tell us about where that vote might be headed?
I don't know anything about it, to be honest with you, Will. I saw Woj reported it. I hadn't heard about it. I will say that it is so much more complicated than do you want to play, yes or no, because starting Friday, NBA players' paychecks start getting docked 25%. And for guys like Steph Curry, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, that's hundreds of thousands of dollars per paycheck. For guys making the bare minimum, rookies on the minimum, it's tens of thousands of dollars a month, certainly over this period. When you ask people like in that vein, do you not want to play? Do you want to continue taking this pay cut? I think it's got to be more than a one-question answer. So the union and the league have been running side by side on this, and they're going to try to do the best they can. But the one thing that I think everybody has to realize who's a sports fan is that this is the return to sports, whether it's baseball, NFL, NBA, is not just going to be a matter of can we hold the virus off. It's going to be a matter of can we come to a labor agreement. You're probably going to end up having to have both things to return to pro sports.
And when you say we have to have a labor agreement, is this under the presumption that the NBA's return would be accompanied by the ripping up of the current CBA and negotiating in record time some new kind of split in revenues?
Yeah, I mean, they may not want to term it the ripping up of, but I don't see how. Look, it's actually pretty simple to understand. The players and the owners split the basketball revenue about 50-50. I'm going to generalize it. Next year, they were expecting to make more than $8 billion, between $8 and $9 billion. And as such, contracts have been signed so that the players will earn $4 billion, according to the contract. Okay, so if they don't earn that $8 billion, if they only earn $6 billion, or if they only earn $5 billion, and the players' contract is still set there at $4 billion, you can see where you have a problem. You can see where there's an overage. And, you know, this is what Adam Silver's talking about, where he says the current document is not designed to handle this. And so what is the answer to that? Well, it's a very simple answer. The players are going to have to take less money. But figuring out how that's going to work out, how long it's going to last and all that stuff, that's where it gets complicated.
And that's what it seems like Major League Baseball is attempting to resolve as we speak as well, a new revenue split between the players and the owners. Brian Windhorst, NBA senior writer here on the Will Cain Show. I want to get into some of those numbers with you if we can in just a moment here, Brian, but I want to follow up on this idea of a yes or no vote from the players. I know you don't have any inside information on that vote right now, but I was listening to you and Tim McMahon and I believe Jane McManus, Jane McMillan, talking about whether or not the players want to return this coming season in 2020. And I remember you being the most pessimistic, to the surprise of your co-hosts, I think, that players would want to return in 2020. You were very skeptical that this would be a very popular idea.
I don't know about the players so much. I just think the feasibility. I've done a lot of work on this. I spent a month working on a story about what a centralized bubble would take. And for every question I got an answer to, two more questions were hatched, and that's why I just think it's going to be very difficult. I think it's going to be hard for any sport to figure it out. The magnitude of this and doing it on the fly. It'd be one thing if you had a year or 18 months in a non-pandemic setting to plan out how you were going to build a single structure operation for a sports league, much less on the fly where you've never done it before. It's just incredibly complex. And maybe they pull it off. They're certainly trying. No matter what anybody says, they are really, really trying. If Adam Silver called me up and said, Brian, you just spent a month talking to all these experts, TV people, hotel people, doctors, NBA people, what would your advice to me be? I would say, shut it down right now and come back in the fall. Have your normal training camp in the fall. And when you start, start the playoffs. Operate your 2020 playoffs, whether that takes 6 weeks or whatever, crown a champion, and then proceed relatively immediately to the 2020-2021 season. Jam them together. And there would be some structural changes. There would be some free agency issues you have to solve there, draft issues you'd have to solve. But I think rushing back to be the first through the door, which I have heard people say, we want to be the first through the door. I would not want to be that. But I am more risk adverse. That's, you know, you look at an operation like the UFC, they like risk. Their entire sport is built on risk. You look at the NFL is a riskier environment than the NBA or Major League Baseball. I feel like the NBA is a little bit more risk adverse. And I would say, let football and baseball, they want to be the first through the door and try to figure this out. Let's let them do it. Let's do this, and this way we can still have a champion and allow things to settle down and don't rush anything.
Brian Windhorst here on the Will Cain Show. I said Jane McMillan. I meant Jackie McMillan just a moment ago when we were talking. That's a fascinating idea, Brian. Let me workshop it with you for just a moment. So what you've proposed is essentially a 2020-2021 season bookended by championships, a championship at the beginning, a playoffs to precede a regular season, then at playoffs once again tacked on to the back end of the 2021 season. I appreciate your perspective. I once read a book. It's by Greg Easterbrook, who used to write here at ESPN, Brian. It's called Sonic Boom. And in it, he talked about the investment firm KKR out in California, a venture fund, private equity fund, actually. And he talked about investment philosophies like this. You don't ever want to be the first, they would say. I don't want to invest in MySpace. I want to invest in Facebook. The crude analogy, by the way, Brian, they used is pioneers get scalped. You want to be on the third wagon train into this exploratory territory. But it works, right? It works, and it fits with your approach to this. I think on the other hand, though, Brian, there are guys, and it's not just about risk. I think it's about risk, what you're saying. But there is a mentality which Dana White seems to have and the UFC has, either out of necessity or instinct. I don't know which one. It could be out of financial necessity. But you can't wait for perfection. You got to jump into the middle of a problem and start slinging around solutions and see what fits. Honestly, Brian, I don't know which one is the better course of action. Both have their merits. Yeah. Both have their problems. I understand where you're coming from. I see the UFC's chosen something different.
I completely agree more. The one thing I think that we are in right now is an environment where we cannot make predictions. Warren Buffett, the man who pioneered his entire fortune on the phrase, when others are afraid, be greedy, and when others are greedy, be afraid, is saying right now, I'm too nervous about not being able to predict the market. I can't be greedy. Even though everyone's afraid, I can't be greedy. And that's just another example of how difficult it is to predict it. The NBA, you know, ideas here of how they're going to restart are shifting almost week to week. I dare say they're making it up as they go along. And I'm not saying that to be flippant or to criticize them. I'm saying it to illustrate that they really are having difficulty week to week. They've got a whole bunch of players who would prefer to go back to their countries in Europe. They have a whole bunch of players who are skittish about even coming to the facilities. One of the questions that was asked to Adam Silver on the call last week was, our teams are making it seem like we have to come into the facilities, but some of us aren't ready. I would not press it. I would say, go have your summer. Let's have the draft as normal. Let the players who are drafted practice. Let them be with your G League team or whatever, what have you, in the fall. And then when the new season starts, bring them in. That's what I would do. Also, the NBA has an advantage. This is not going to be a very active free agency period. They could do the free agency in a week to 10 days, I believe, at this particular year. Other years, I don't think you could do that. But I don't think that's what the NBA is looking at, what I'm suggesting. I think they're looking at ways to try to get back in August or early September and be done by then, because they don't want to fight with football. And I would say football doesn't even know when football is going to play. So it's so frustrating in a world where everybody needs certainty. And not only that, the black and white contracts with the signatures on them have certainty of payment. Everybody is looking for this certainty, and we just don't have it. And it's frustrating that we don't have it, because we equate, in the American mindset, equates uncertainty with not being able to execute. And that's going to push people into making decisions, I believe. And that's what I think could be dangerous. Really, Will, what this is going to come down to at the bottom line is going to be a sport by sport. What is the risk that you are comfortable with? The UFC has made its position clear. Roger Goodell will have to make his position clear. Gary Bettman, Rob Manfred, and Adam Silver will have to make their positions clear. And if I, you know, I'm not an expert on all these sports, but if I had to plot on a course of risk-averse people, I think Adam Silver is at the opposite end of Dana White. I think the NBA is more likely to be more risk-sensitive than the other sports.
I totally agree with you. This is about governmental, organizational, and in the end, it will be about individual risk tolerance. I want to go just a little bit longer with Brian Windhorst here, because I have one more topic that I wanted to get to with you. Now, I understand, Brian, I'm playing out a worst-case scenario, but you mentioned people equate uncertainty with the inability to execute. They're wrong, because you're always executing in an uncertain future. It's about a degree of uncertainty. But here, so I bring that up to say this. One of the potentialities is a worst case scenario. And I want to ask you what you think that looks like. I'm sitting here looking at Bobby Marks, who was on my show yesterday, saying 40% drop in gross revenues if you lose the game day experience, meaning fans, concessions, merchandising at the game. 40% in gross revenue drop. I see the latest news that China is declining to continue to stay in business with the NBA, at least as far as TV rights, for the foreseeable future. At the time, the reports were that was a $300 million loss to the NBA for half of a year. So if I take that out, Brian, that's $600 million. That's another 10%, a little under, of NBA revenues. What I'm getting at is we're approaching close to a 50% drop, if these projections are correct, in gross revenues. What's the worst case scenario of how that plays out for the NBA? Is contraction a potentiality?
I don't think contraction. What I think will end up happening, well, I shouldn't say I think will end up happening. What I think is something that could happen is that they nationalize the league. And what I mean by that is they say, okay, for this year, hopefully just this year, we're going to take all of our revenues and we're going to throw them into a pot and we're going to divide them by 30. So, hey, maybe they can have fans in Atlanta in the fall, but they can't have them in New York City. Guess what? We're taking that ticket revenue and we're putting it into the pot at the middle of it. Maybe they can't have fans in Los Angeles, but they can have fans in Houston, for example. We're not going to penalize the Lakers because their area is not able to handle it. That's another thing that's an issue. We have 28 different markets in the NBA. So that's what I think is something that's probably out there on the boards, is that we basically come together as 30 partners and we weather this storm together. And as 450 members of the union, we say, okay, we're going to weather this storm together. We're all going to take the exact same percentage cut. Whether or not those two things can happen, whether those things are even needed to happen, we don't know yet. But I'm telling you, before a basketball can be thrown up, before a pitch can be thrown, before there can be a kickoff, there's going to have to be a labor agreement right alongside an understanding of how to fight the virus. And that is going to be a complicated that no one has really been thinking about until recently.
Really fascinating conversation, insightful, with ESPN's NBA senior writer and host of the Hoop Collective podcast, Brian Windhorst, here on The Will Cain Show. Brian, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Will. Take care.
Really good stuff there from Brian Windhorst. Here's a question for you. How many losses before the Patriots no longer matter? That's coming up on The Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card. That's why we created Eno, the Capital One assistant that looks out for surprise credit card charges like over-tipping, duplicate charges, or potential fraud, then sends an alert to your phone and helps if you need to fix them. Another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details.
GEICO gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, Social Security, is that a thing? Hey, Mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
This is Will Cain.
Look, one of two things is true. Either I'm a moron surrounded by geniuses, or I'm a genius surrounded by morons.
This is the Will Cain Show.
Some breaking news for you here on the Will Cain Show. This, according to the Los Angeles Times, the Cal State University system, which has 23 campuses across California, plans to all but cancel in-person classes in the fall and will offer instruction primarily online, Chancellor Timothy White announced on Tuesday. I'm going to read from this article now, quoting from the Los Angeles Times. The vast majority of classes across the Cal State system will be taught online, White said, with some limited exceptions that allow for in-person activity. The decision comes as schools throughout the country grapple with how long to keep campuses closed amid the coronavirus pandemic. Quick quote from their chancellor. Our university, when open without restrictions and fully in person, is a place where over 500,000 people come together in close and a vibrant proximity. That approach, sadly, just isn't in the cards now. Now, the Cal State system has several schools you will have known and heard of, even if you're not a resident of California. The biggest campuses in the Cal State system are schools like Fullerton, Northridge, Long Beach. The schools that are Division I athletics are Fresno State, San Jose State, San Diego State. Now, what does this mean? Well, we've heard on several occasions, first from Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby, who, for what it's worth, was, I believe, the president of Stanford University before, who said, we will not be having sports if we do not have students on campus. Then that was followed up most recently by NCAA President Mark Emmert, who said something similar, that without students on campus, we won't be having sports this fall. The Cal State University system has now committed to not having students on campus this fall. At a minimum, you would assume that means no football, no basketball, no fall sports for Fresno State, San Jose State, Long Beach State, Cal State Fullerton. Now, I have a hard time believing, if that's the case, that this decision would be one limited to the Cal State system. The other public university system in California of note, of course, is the UC system, the University of California system, which is Cal Berkeley and UCLA, UC Davis. These are now schools with big student bodies, big athletic programs, and for many of them, Pac-12 membership. If the UC system follows the Cal State system, and it's certainly not unreasonable to assume that it would, that would mean by the logic of Mark Emmert, president of the NCAA, there would not be football or basketball or fall sports at a school like UCLA in 2020. And if there are not sports in the fall at major Pac-12 universities, how do the dominoes continue to fall? Does that affect the rest of the Pac-12 schools? Do schools like Oregon and Arizona follow suit? And if that happens across the Pac-12, what happens across the country? In other states, like New York, that have a very serious coronavirus outbreak, what about other states that have governments who make similar decisions to California, similar ideologies, similar ideas about this, similar beliefs? Will they also follow suit? It's hard to take this Cal State decision and say, this is isolated. This is only about Fresno State. It's hard to see that this is not the beginning of the biggest threat to sports in 2020 yet. If Cal State cancels students on campus, doesn't that in effect, and we will be looking for the answer to this and finding it for you here on the Will Cain Show, mean there will not be sports in the fall of 2020 at Cal State schools? And if Cal State makes that decision, why would the UC system be different. And if the UC system makes that decision, why would other Pac-12 schools be vastly different? Of course, they have different governing bodies, different governors, different state legislatures. But you have to ask yourself, where do the dominoes stop falling? We'll be looking for answers on that. We'll try to get newsmakers to tell us exactly what this means. I think it means much more than simply students not being on campus at Cal State Fullerton or Long Beach State this fall. Coming up, how many losses? How deep into the season? Can the Patriots afford to falter before national attention goes the other way? They got 5 primetime games this fall. Will the attention be there for a team that doesn't have Tom Brady and isn't winning? That's coming up on The Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
It could be a routine drive to pick up the kids after school or an epic road trip across the country. No matter where your travels take you, we know those miles count. We're Marathon. We have over 5,700 stations across our great nation. Our people are working hard every day to provide you with quality top-tier gasoline to improve engine performance and fuel your life. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
This is The Will Cain Show.
Will Cain was in general admission and the VIPs were in VIP. It was going to be a surprise that Will Cain emerged.
To chime in, obviously people noticed Will Cain was there because when he walked out, it was the loudest boos I had ever heard. It was just Will Cain being escorted to his seat, minding his own business.
A wrestling show, and he eats it up. Eats it up.
A word got to me is that he loved it, and he turned to who was escorting him. Did you get that for social?
You know, who loves that? Like, who in the history of sports media loves everyone's poisonous hatred?
We might have just seen the first domino fall for collegiate fall sports. That's coming up a little bit later here on The Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. The other day, in our pre-show meeting, our boy Pat, who said with some relish, I have to say, much to the pleasure of our Supreme Leader, Nuno, "Hey, how long till everybody continues caring about the Patriots?" We said, "Young Pat, what exactly do you mean?" He said, "How many losses can they take before we tune them out?" And he brought up a fairly interesting point. The Patriots have been at the center of our national attention for almost 2 decades, and it has been built upon the backs of 2 men, Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. Of course, you know Tom Brady has decamped to Florida. He's a Tampa Bay Buccaneer, and both the Bucs and the Pats have a strong primetime football schedule in 2020. The Patriots, without Tom Brady, retained 5 primetime games throughout the season. We're talking Thursday night, Sunday night, Monday night football. The Patriots are going to be on your television screen, but how long will you continue to care about them? How many losses can they take and remain one of the most important, most watched teams in the NFL? I'm not doubting Belichick. I know this thing was built on Belichick and Brady, but you don't really tune in to NFL games because of the guy on the sideline. You tune in because of the guys on the field. Most notably, you tune in because of the quarterback on the field. Jarrett Stidham better be good. Because if the Patriots take a couple L's, I don't know that those primetime games are going to be giving television broadcasters the ratings they hope when they schedule the New England Patriots. While we're talking about retaining everyone's attention and television ratings, I did have this note just cross my desk, and I found this fascinating. I asked Errol Hawani last week, how many buys would be a success for UFC 249? Last weekend's headliner of Tony Ferguson and Justin Gaethje was really the first big national primetime sporting event in what? 7 weeks? Now, Ariel told me in a normal period, 200,000-300,000 buys would be really good for a UFC event that was headlined by guys like Ferguson and Gaethje. You get Conor McGregor in, you're talking 2 million, definitely over 1 million. You're talking big time. But without it, I think Ariel said 500,000 would be like huge. It'd be great for them. Now, that lack of a headliner is, of course, offset against the fact that nobody's watched any damn sports for 7 weeks, so there's some pent-up demand. Well, there are some reports that the numbers this past weekend for UFC 249 were 700,000 buys. I would suspect that's a massive win for the UFC and ESPN to get that number of buys, and it shows the amount of pent-up demand. We need us some live sports. We need it badly. Do we need the Patriots if they take some L's? Well, early indication is they can't survive many. Here are some stats for you right here that are pretty fascinating. So this is secondary ticket sales. Now, of course, right now, ticket sales are going to be down everywhere across the board, right? So I think this is impacted by the idea of people going, well, why am I buying secondary tickets? I'm not even sure there's going to be a season. But don't just dismiss this for that reason just yet. Nuno, if he has any cell service worth a hot damn, can jump in here to correct me if my numbers are wrong. I believe that secondary sales for tickets for the New England Patriots are down 30% as compared to last year. Okay, well, you know, people aren't buying tickets because they don't know if they're going to be able to go in person. That would depress the market. Yes, but secondary ticket sales for Tampa Bay Buccaneer games are up 100% for the 2020 season. We got to even it out here.
135% for Tampa Bay.
And was I correct on the Patriots down 30%?
They're down 33%, so you were close. But 135 is a jump for Tampa for the Bucs.
Now, logic would require us to make that even. If the coronavirus pandemic and the potential for no people in the stands were depressing the Patriots' secondary ticket sales, we then would have to say, well, that would depress the Buccaneers' ticket sales as well. Yet theirs are up 135%. Let's call it the Tom Brady effect. Clearly, there is going to be some demand for Buccaneers games. And clearly, there's some decline in demand for Patriots games. And yet, here they are with five primetime games this fall. So how many L's can they take and continue to hold our attention? Well, here's how their season starts. They've got the Dolphins to start the season, and we'll go ahead and assume they can handle that young Dolphins team. Then they go on the road to the Seahawks, play the Raiders at home. Then they have the Chiefs away. Right now, what are you looking at? If you like them against the Raiders, okay. I think they're going to have a battle on their hands, even though it's in Foxborough. I think at best, though, you're saying 2-2 with losses to the Seahawks and the Chiefs. Then they take on the Broncos. And I'll tell you right now, Broncos fans are feeling pretty good about their team. I've had several experts jump on the show the last couple of weeks and say the Broncos are going to be a team that is going to make the playoffs. The Broncos are going to be a team that surprises. I know that Lewis Riddick, ESPN's NFL insider, has said that recently. The Pats then get a bye, and then they have to take on the Niners and Jimmy Garoppolo at home. Travel to the Bills of 10-6 last year, probably your favorites in the AFC East, before they go to play the Jets. And then Ravens, Texans. It doesn't get easy all the way through November. I think you're looking at a team that's going win-loss, win-loss, at best. You're talking about a 500 level team, maybe 9-7, maybe 7-9. If the Patriots are muddling along with a record like that, if the Patriots are muddling along taking those kind of losses to the Bills, the Ravens, the Texans, the Niners, maybe the Broncos, the Chiefs, the Seahawks. I mean, there's a worst case scenario here where you could look at a Patriots team limping along with a terrible record and five primetime games. I'll tell you this. Four or five losses in the first 2 months of the season, and I think television executives are going to start wondering, did we do the right thing in picking up all those Patriots primetime games? Did we do the right thing? Or should we have picked up another couple Bucks games? Maybe it turns out Brady's the ticket seller. Brady's the ratings driver. Belichick's the one that just wins. And he better this year. Otherwise, people are going to be checking out on the New England Patriots. Tune in to the conclusion of The Last Dance this Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN. Listen to the wrap-up podcast hosted by Jalen and Jacoby immediately following the broadcast, presented by State Farm and AT&T. Available wherever you enjoy your podcast. I just broke the news to you in the last segment of the Will Cain Show. The Cal State University system in California has announced there will be no students on campus in the fall. And we've been told no students on campus, no sports in the stadiums. Why would this stop at the Cal State system? Why wouldn't the UC system follow suit? Would the Pac-12 follow suit? One of the friends of our show just tweeted me, said, no football for the Pac-12 this year. He's not reporting. He's guessing. We'll break down what this domino means and how many continue to fall next on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Geico has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Once the dominoes start falling, it's hard to stop them, and it's hard to see how many dominoes will eventually fall. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio. The breaking news of the moment is the Los Angeles Times is reporting the Cal State University system will have no students on campus this fall. The great unknown, I feel like for me personally, perhaps for you and your family as well, for businesses, for sports leagues, has been what will happen in the fall. I feel like there's been this chasm, a Grand Canyon level gap, perhaps one filled with hope for all of us. What happens in June, July, and August? Do we reset? Can we get back to some sense of normalcy? Can we imagine the nation healing physically, emotionally, economically, to a place that once we arrive in September, it's some semblance of business as usual? That we can imagine the NFL kicking off in early September, college football roaring to life mid-October, that we have our businesses back in November. Because summer stands between us and those decisions, it's been able to be something that we've put off. It's been something we've been able to remain hopeful about. But back there in the back of our minds, the warnings have started to come home. NCAA President Mark Emmert said, if there aren't students on campus this fall, there won't be football in the stadiums. There won't be fall sports. Before that, Bob Bowlsby, the commissioner of the Big 12, had said something similar. We are a university system. We are about student athletes. If we can't have students on campus, we can't have student athletes on the field. Well, the Cal State system has said there will be no students on campus this fall. The Cal State system has bridged the gap. They've jumped over the canyon. They've crossed that gap of hope and said no to the fall. I would assume this means they are also saying no to fall sports. Who is that? That's Fresno State. That's San Diego State. That's San Jose State. That's Cal State Fullerton. Those are Division I schools under the Cal State system. Now, I don't think I'm being hyperbolic. I don't think I'm being dramatic to say, why would it stop with the Cal State system? This is a system that is run by the state of California, different governing body than the UC system, but all ultimately answerable to the state legislature. The UC system now has schools like Cal, Berkeley, and UCLA, schools who compete in the Pac-12. It's hard to say. Explain to me why the Cal State system would arrive at one decision and the UC system would arrive at an entirely different one. It's hard to see how the UC system won't follow the Cal State system into saying we won't have students on campus this fall. And if that's the case, will we have football and basketball for UCLA come September and November? And if that's the case, what does it mean for the Pac-12? What does it mean if UCLA and Cal are out? What does that do to Oregon and Arizona? Their scheduling, their conference championship. Jeff Schwartz, ESPN football analyst, friend of the show, who played at the University of Oregon, said, no sports for the Pac-12 this fall. That's his prediction. He's not reporting. That's his skepticism about whether or not there will be sports in the fall in the entire Pac-12. Now, I don't know if that doomsday scenario is going to come true, but help me figure out where the dominoes stop falling. Help me figure out a logical end to that conclusion. Because once it starts, it's hard to draw lines. I certainly can't draw a line between Cal State and the UC system. And maybe that's a product of my ignorance. I'm certainly capable of being ignorant, and you can help me out. 888-729-3776. But I can't draw the line there, so I keep going. Okay, well, maybe we can draw a line to the state borders of California, and other Pac-12 schools won't make the same decision. So Oregon and Arizona, you're on. Utah, go get them. Although, I can't imagine the Pac-12 saying, okay, we're going to do a fall football schedule with, I don't know, what does it end up being? 80% of the schools in our system,
All the conversation has been, if you're contracting, you're getting away with your non-conference schedule. But you're going to keep up your conference schedule. You're going to go ahead and crown a champion. How can you do that if one of the states within your conference are putting an end to sports at universities that belong to that conference? So does that end the Pac-12? Can we draw the line there? And if the Pac-12 doesn't, where does the line from there go on? There it gets easier, I would assume, because the Pac-12 is different than the SEC. Although, SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey, who previously seemed pretty confident they'd be having sports in the fall at SEC schools, was just now on the Paul Feinbaum show, and all of a sudden he wasn't as committed. Listen to this.
I was asked a question, and I think if the entirety is played, I spoke when this flared up, of the connection between the Autonomy 5 conferences being likely stronger than I've ever experienced. We're speaking every day. But even more importantly, our schedules are connected. So the notion that one lightly thinks about going off and doing something in an independent way is actually not attached to reality.
So you can't make a decision as a single school. I don't know if you can make a decision as a single conference. On Get Up this morning, ESPN college football personality Paul Feinbaum said this: Alabama is already in talks with TCU about replacing USC in its September 5th opener. So Alabama is scheduled to play USC on September 5th. Alabama fearing that these lines can't be drawn that I'm drawing out for you right now, that you can't separate the Cal State system from the UC system, and you can't separate USC, a private school, from the UC system, because they're all inside the borders of the state of California and all playing inside the Pac-12, which is now under threat, is looking to replace, potentially, USC in its season opener. Why TCU? Because of the same exact reason. TCU is scheduled to take on Berkeley that same day. TCU is playing Cal on that same day. Alabama and TCU talking about playing each other instead on September 5th. This, I'm telling you, I'm not trying to be a doomsdayer. I'm not trying to hyperventilate about this, but this decision by the Cal State University system seems to me to be the first domino in no fall sports for colleges inside the state of California. And if there are no fall sports for colleges inside the state of California, then how does the Pac-12 field a schedule, a conference, a fall sports schedule in 2020? Maybe we can draw the line after that. Maybe we can separate the Pac-12 from the Big 12. Maybe we can separate the Pac-12 from the SEC. But the dominoes start falling, it's hard to get them to stop. You start drawing the lines, you start trying to ask yourself, which line is the one that gets bold enough to contain this type of decision? I don't know what's right. I don't know what's wrong. I know that in the course of the last 3 hours, we discussed the NBA, Major League Baseball, and collegiate sports, that all of a sudden the state of California and the Pac-12 is at the forefront of the decision of whether or not we're going to have fall sports in 2020. And if these dominoes start falling, ask yourself, how do the Dodgers participate in a return to Major League Baseball? If California is on a lockdown for the next 3 months, how do the Lakers participate in the NBA season? It's hard to stop.
Thank you for listening to the Will Cain Podcast. You can listen to The Will Cain Show live weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. The Will Cain Podcast.